ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions to help businesses of all sizes think beyond today so they can find more success tomorrow. ADP, always designing for HR, talent, time, payroll, people.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, December 13th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. The rise of open source information, from videos shared on YouTube to academic papers published in online journals, means there are fewer secrets in the world these days. And for spy agencies that are used to operating in the shadows, it means there's more competition for intelligence gathering. On today's show, reporter Warren Stropel, who covers intelligence and security for us, will be here to talk about the global competition to harness the power of publicly available data and how agencies like the CIA are adapting. That's after these headlines. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried has been arrested in the Bahamas, where he's been since stepping down as the head of the crypto exchange last month. The Office of the Attorney General of the Bahamas said Bankman-Fried's arrest came after authorities in the U.S. filed sealed charges against him. A person familiar with the matter said the Securities and Exchange Commission will accuse him of securities fraud, and the U.S. is expected to request his extradition. In a statement, the Bahamian Prime Minister said both his country and the U.S. have a shared interest in holding accountable anyone associated with FTX who may have, quote, betrayed the public trust and broken the law. Bankman-Fried was scheduled to testify before Congress today in a hearing about last month's collapse of FTX. Congressional aides say they no longer expect him to appear. Microsoft is becoming a part owner in Europe's biggest stock exchange. It's taking a 4% stake in the London Stock Exchange's parent company. And as part of the deal, the LSE Group will spend nearly $3 billion on Microsoft's cloud service, Azure, and other products over the next decade. The deal reflects the growing symbiosis between big tech and financial markets companies, as the latter deals with a growing amount of data. Google and Amazon have also both struck large deals with exchanges to use their cloud services. More from the intersection of tech and finance, small banks say they may need to drop their partnerships with instant payment apps like Zelle if they're required to reimburse customers who've been scammed. The seven large banks that own Zelle are facing pressure from lawmakers and regulators to do more to protect customers from fraud. And we told you last month that they're working on a plan to standardize refunds. But industry trade groups say credit unions and community banks may not be able to afford to repay scammed customers. Early Warning Services, the company that runs Zelle, said fraud and scam payments represent less than 0.1% of payments across the network. Rivian has paused talks with Mercedes-Benz over plans to produce electric vans in Europe. Our reporter Julie Steinberg says the move is part of Rivian's efforts to conserve cash.
The move comes as Rivian executives have been cautious about overextending their operations in the wake of tightening capital markets and concerns over the economy. The startup said it believes that its current business, selling trucks and SUVs to retail customers, and the commercial van deal it has with Amazon, are best positioned to drive profitability in the near term.
Rivian said it would be willing to pursue a deal with Mercedes-Benz at a later date. And for the EV industry in Europe more broadly, there may be some roadblocks ahead. The EU is deciding whether to classify lithium, a crucial component of EV batteries, as toxic. The scientific arm of the European Commission has recommended the label, but a final ruling has been pushed until next year. European automakers worry that a toxic label could push investors towards the U.S., where federal laws have already created strong incentives to establish EV supply chains. All right, coming up, a small private team digging through lots of publicly available data was able to predict Russia's invasion of Ukraine down to the very day. But that's only the start of what open source intelligence might be able to do. We'll get into it after the break.
Today's podcast is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. The technology landscape is changing before our eyes. Is your portfolio keeping up? Visit chartingdisruption.com to explore our interactive guide to the trends, technologies, and bold ideas shaping markets.
Last fall, as Russian troops began massing near Ukraine's border, a small Western intelligence unit began tracking signs that Moscow was preparing to invade. It predicted Russia would likely invade Ukraine on February 23rd, U.S. East Coast time. And it did. The group of analysts behind the spot-on report wasn't from the U.S. CIA or the British MI5. They were from the multinational chemicals company, Dow Inc. And they did their intelligence gathering using only open-source information. So what does this kind of publicly available intelligence say about where international spycraft is headed? Joining us to talk about it is WSJ intelligence and security reporter Warren Stropel. Hi, Warren. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, when we talk about open source intelligence gathering, what kind of information are we actually talking about?
So open source intelligence is basically the information world that is exploding all around us. It can be anything from YouTube videos to other social media to medical databases that are online and public to consumer business information that's online and public. It's just exploding at an incredible rate.
I mentioned Dow, the chemical company, having an intelligence unit that was able to write up these accurate reports using open source information. But are government spy agencies around the world also tapping this open source information?
Well, for 75 years, the CIA in particular, and it does turn 75 this year, has its culture, its whole mode of doing business really has been based on secret information, secret sources, secret operations, classified information. And they're very smart people, but they live in a world where everything is classified, where they operate in classified spaces. And there is a culture shift that I am told needs to happen in order for them to take more advantage of the information that's actually out there. And if it's not publicly available, it's publicly gettable. They then have to take that information, vet it, because we all know there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation online. And then they have to meld that into the reports that are also based on their secret sources. So it's quite a task. And from what I'm told, they're getting underway, but there's a long way to go.
You've been speaking with current and former U.S. intelligence officials. Can you tell us more about why it's been so hard for the CIA to make that culture shift you mentioned?
Part of it is just culture shifts are hard, right? And the CIA is used to doing secret stuff with secret information, and they've had their ups and downs over the years, but they've done some really interesting things with classified information and secret sources in Russia and China and elsewhere. And there's been this sense in the CIA and other agencies that if it's not secret, it can't be important. That's just how they view the world. And I think the culture shift is starting to happen, but open source information, which comprises 80 to 90% of what the president or the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff needs to know, they are still having trouble getting their head around the fact that the world is really changing around them.
So that's the U.S. Are other government spy agencies better at tapping this open source information?
You know, I looked at China in particular, and I read this report where China has 100,000 people whose sole job it is to go out and look at publicly available scientific and technical reports that the United States and other countries produce all the time, to analyze those and to look at those for important information that China would want to know. Not only that, the Chinese culture is different, where what we call open source intelligence, or the shorthand is OSINT, for them it's not like a separate thing. They see it all as part of one big picture.
What about the role of companies here when it comes to tapping this information? I mean, are they more prepared than our spies?
You know, it's fascinating, like Dow Chemical, which has its small intelligence unit basically to protect Dow's business assets and people. And they were able to predict at least as accurately as the U.S. intelligence community the date of the Russian invasion. They were able to draw up escape plans for several people that they had who were in the Russia-Ukraine region. And they're just one of many. Almost every major company now has its own intelligence and protection unit that are staffed by former intelligence people. And in some ways, they can do it quicker and cheaper than the government apparatus.
You mentioned so many more companies have these groups. I mean, is it just because the information is more available? Are there other reasons why companies are developing these, what seems like internal spy agencies?
I'm not sure I'd call them spy agencies, because, you know, Zoe spy sort of indicates like you're running agents and doing stuff like that. But there's certainly internal intelligence agencies or units, right? And I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, as you said, there's so much more information out there that's available to everybody, including to us. And secondly, it's a dangerous world out there, where if you're a major company that has people and assets all over the world, you need to know if a threat is growing that could put your people or your business at risk.
What are the risks for the U.S. if it doesn't get better at doing this, particularly, as you mentioned, with China getting better and with these private companies getting better at collecting and analyzing this public information?
The COVID pandemic, I think, is one example where most people would say the intelligence community didn't do a really great job in terms of recognizing early on that this pandemic was happening and what the implications were. They still haven't been able to determine whether the source of the COVID virus was a lab leak or a natural transmission. Spy agencies will say, well, that's the CDC's job. We're not a public health agency. But the fact is, COVID killed 1 million Americans and made many millions more sick. So the risks are that in the future, if you're the CIA and you have your secret sources, which are good, but if you don't kind of do the whole picture with the open source material that's out there and find the needles in the open source haystack, you may miss the next pandemic, the next kind of threat that comes out of left field, not to mention the challenge from China.
Now, one thing that might make it easier for China to get that bigger picture is that it just has fewer restrictions on what it can do with its citizens' information, unlike the U.S. and Europe. So what do officials you've spoken to say it'll mean for the U.S. if China is just much better at using this open source information?
They may pick and choose from our technical advancements that are, scientists and academics love to report. In fact, it's part of their culture to report their findings and their research publicly. The Chinese may be able to pick and choose from that, gain insights that would otherwise have taken them years or decades, and leap ahead on kind of the next generation technologies like 6G, quantum computing, artificial intelligence, machine learning, all those. And they can then turn around. This is all in theory, but they could turn around and use those technologies to dominate industries or even for their own spying purposes.
All right. That was our reporter, Warren Stropel. Warren, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Wall Street Journal editorial page is always on top of the latest from Washington and around the world. I'm Kyle Peterson, and you can join me, Paul Jagot, Kim Strassel, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.